Hi, today's April 23rd, 2016. This is Mobile Views Podcast number 157. I'm Todd Ogasso with my good friend John Westfall, who I've not spoken to in like almost a month.
Yeah, it's been very, very long. And then last week you didn't have me around to podcast with, and I missed a great podcast. But I'm back this week for, you know, my usual boring contributions.
Hardly. But yeah, the reason that John wasn't on last week's podcast is I believe you were traveling or going to a sporting event or something like that.
We had plans to basically make a day trip on Sunday, and that we made those plans before you told me you were unavailable on Saturday, so it just didn't work out. But this week, we did our day tripping earlier, since the time difference between us allows for greater flexibility at this time of when we're recording.
And this past Monday, the reason I did a podcast without John, otherwise I would have just left it, you know, we would have had 3 weeks of no podcast, but last week, Monday, Google finally had their podcast service in Google Music go live. And so I thought, well, I should have a fresh podcast for folks who might find us there. So the ones of you that downloaded
it. one of you that downloaded it and really liked those guys last week, sorry, you're stuck with me.
But we are now on both iTunes and Google Music podcasts, whatever the heck they call it. They have actually sent me language on how to speak about their or how to write about their service. You know, you don't say download, you don't say this, and it was very I don't know if draconian is the word, but there is a very formal way of describing it. It was quite interesting.
You read the language. I haven't. So just tell me all the things I'm not supposed to say, and I'll say them.
I have to go back, but I remember saying, wow, this is kind of strict. You know, I hope nobody's going to hit me with a ruler if I say it by accident. But in any case, the reason I wasn't available to Podcaster John for the last couple of weeks is I went to go visit my daughter, who's doing a study abroad in England. And we traveled through Scotland and then spent a few days in England where I visited her campus before heading home. And I am not exactly a world traveler. In fact, if you think of, you know, the sophisticated international travelers, I am the exact opposite. If you want to picture me traveling, get the picture of the country bumpkin, because that's pretty much me. You know, I'm a, kind of a small town kind of guy, and I don't really
know a lot.
In
your defense, you already live in paradise. So you don't really need to travel that much. You're not trying to escape from much.
But I rarely travel outside the U.S. In fact, I had to get my passport renewed because it had expired. And just to go visit my daughter. And so it was a learning experience for me, you know, very much so. So some of the stuff I'm going to mention today is our kind of our travel tech stories podcast. Is not going to be news to those of you who are jet setters. But for those of you who are more like country bumpkins like me, you might find some of this interesting. And if you don't, well, I'm sorry. But I found it interesting, so sorry about that. So, John, I don't know. I know you used to, flit around a lot and for various and sundry purposes. And I don't know how much of this is news to you either. But, you know, if you've got any suggestions of how I should have done it maybe or what I did wrong, please chime in. You know, as I said, I am certainly not an expert at this stuff. And
there are certainly things I'm curious as I look through your very detailed list here of things I'm curious about how easy or hard you were to pull off.
Okay, so. Sure. And it, as John says, a long list. So we may split this apart into two podcasts if we go long. If we start to go long, we'll just say we'll chop it off at, you know, item number 524. And and go to 525 next week. But
I mean, we should really, since you have 1,024, we should stop like 512.
We'll do it. Yeah, half a bite.
Yep.
okay.
We can start with a nibble. Okay. So at least we'll get through the first four.
So to start with, I not being a frequent flyer, really didn't care which airlines I flew on, and I ended up on American Airlines. That was, you know, met my time constraints and costs and all of that. So I took American Airlines from Honolulu to Heathrow. That's, actually three flights. I took American Airlines from Honolulu to LAX, LAX to Heathrow, and then I was on British Airways from Heathrow to Edinburgh, Scotland. So on the on the over the water flights from here to LAX and LAX to Heathrow, both planes had a USB port under each of the in-seat displays. Now, this is not unusual. I mean, you know, I've seen this in other airlines going just domestic. What was kind of interesting, though, is that one of the options is called an iPod mode. iPod mode. That tells you how old this tech is. Mm-hmm. That apparently allowed you to display video from your iPod, you know, like the old iPod video models that you could watch movies on, into the in-seat screen. Unfortunately, it literally only works with iPods and iPhones that are model 4S or older. So if you have a 5 or newer, and I have a 6 plus, it doesn't work. I also tried it with my Nexus 6, which is an Android phone. And the phone said, hey, do you want me to share your USB? And I said, do I really trust these guys? No, I didn't scan the network, so I didn't know. I said, no, let's not do that. But I thought that was kind of interesting. I just wish that airlines were able to get more updated in their technology so you could use something, you know, other than iPhone 4S or older with it.
Especially when it seems like it shouldn't be too hard to do. I mean, that in-flight entertainment system should have the ability to be updated and flashed. And unless it's a physical hardware problem with the Lightning port, I don't really understand why.
Well, this was
why
USB, but yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying, going USB to Lightning. Got it.
Yeah, because that's where the switch is between Lightning and 30-pin is the 4S to the 5. So
good point.
It just doesn't seem like, well, it seems like another move by the airlines to not do something that everyone else says. This is a pretty obvious thing you could do to make your customers happy.
Yeah. And the other thing I learned, again, being, you know, country bumpkin type traveler, is that a number of the movies that were, for the flight from Hawaii to Los Angeles, which is about 5 hours or so, there are a number of free movies and TV shows you could watch on the in-flight system. But there were also some movies that were premium and you had to pay for if you wanted to watch. But on the international flight from LAX to Heathrow, pretty much everything was free. I can't think of anything that was a premium for-pay movie. So, you know, I got to watch some relatively recent movies I hadn't seen, like Creed, which I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, not exactly gadget, but I thought that was interesting for, you know, again, people who, like me, don't travel much. The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, I bought this... I really don't know who this company is. They're called August, like the month. But they were really relatively inexpensive noise-canceling earbuds on Amazon with this August brand. I think it was less than $40, like $38.50 or something like that. It's powered by one AA battery in a round container that hangs like a pendulum. And when I tested it at home, by testing, I mean, you know, I turned on a fan, turned on a washing machine, and I put my head next to it and tried to listen. It seemed like it really wasn't canceling much. And these are pretty typical of the tests I use when I test noise cancellation headphones. So I was a little bit disappointed. I said, you know what? I bought them. It's got good reviews on Amazon. I'm going to take them with me. If they don't work, I have regular earbuds, but they work relatively well in airlines. So I said, all is not lost. But when I went on, I was really pleased, surprisingly pleased, to learn these things work pretty well. So there's a little on-off switch, and I popped it into my ears, left it off, started listening to a podcast or music or something, and then I popped it on, and wow, it really is. The noise level did drop, the volume did, you know, perceptually seemed to be elevated because I assumed the noise dropped. But they worked really well. And I never had to change the battery. I used one AA battery for, all told, I think I had about 22 hours of you know, in the air kind of stuff. So I'm really pleased. I'll go put a link to Amazon in our podcast notes, and you know, they've got my seal of approval, if you will. It worked for me. So I was really happy with that. I don't know, John. I've tried a bunch of noise canceling headsets, but this is the first noise canceling earbud that I've ever.
Yeah, bought. And I have not used them, but I think before I take my next flight, I probably will look at least the ones that you got, because that has always been a problem that I've had, because I do tend to, because I am larger than most people and life itself, I tend to only be able to do auditory things, so a lot of podcasts. I can't sit there on my laptop because I have no room. I can't really even use anything other than my phone in front of me. So I definitely listen to a lot of podcasts on flights and a lot of music, so
yeah.
Might have to look into these.
Yeah, my one, and I don't even know if I would call it a criticism, but let's call it an observation, is that, you know, you need some kind of power for a noise-canceling headset. You can't do it passively through, you know, just plugging it in. And so it does have a AA, and the battery, like I said, hangs like a pendulum, and that thing is a little hard to put somewhere sometimes. Now, if you're listening to a podcast, what I did is I stuck the battery in my pocket, you know, along with the phone, and you know, that was okay. But the challenge was when I plugged it into the earphone jack and the in-seat display area, and it was basically the seat in front of me. You know, it just was kind of hanging down there, and I would sort of put the tray out, and it would just barely touch the tray and kind of prop it up like that. But if I had any recommendation to August, is to somehow figure out a way to make that battery less obnoxious than where it is. And quite frankly, I'm a little worried that its weight is going to cause some damage to the headphone jack or something as it weighs it down over time. But again, it's less than $40, so if you have to buy it every 2 years, it's not like buying a $400 headset or something and having to rebuy it every couple of years. Although I bet you people do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next thing on my list is, you know, again, not being a seasoned international traveler, the last time I went out of the U.S., I had to take a... I'll reverse that. Let me back up. One of the things I learned, my daughter mentioned it to me before I got to the UK, since she's been there a couple of months already, is that every electrical outlet in the UK is switched. And generally speaking, in the hotels I went to, they were all switched off when you get there, which is the way it's supposed to be for safety, I assume. And I remembered to switch them on when I was, you know, I plugged in a charger or something. But I remember standing there in my hotel going, why isn't my TV turning on? and that was because even though TV was already plugged into the socket was turned off. And it didn't occur to my US brain that I needed to turn on the socket to watch TV, you know, turn on the power to the socket before I actually turned on the TV. So,
you know, should it, Todd, because we fought a war to break away from people who do crazy things like that. So, you know, I don't blame you for your America brain not realizing that. The TV should always be vampire sucking power the wall. It should never be turned off.
That's right. That's the way it was intended to be used.
Yes. When Abraham Lincoln invented the television set standing atop George Washington's grave while waving the American flag and a bald eagle landed on top of his hat, that was exactly the way
it was. And that's a TV moment if there was one. But yeah, so that was
yeah.
It's a good thing there's no video, because I probably look really puzzled for about 3 minutes until, oh, there's a switch there. moving on to the, you know, again, it's been so long since I traveled. When I used to, it's not like I did it regularly. The few times I traveled internationally in the old days, I had to take a voltage regulator with me, basically to, you know, switch from 230, 50 or 150 to, you know, 120, 60, which we expect in the U.S. But those days are gone. You know, the plug adapters these days, at least all the ones I carried with me, were automatically switched. All I needed was a physical plug adapter to plug into the giant three-prong system they use in the U.K. But so that was really easy, and that was really nice. I didn't even carry a voltage transformer with me, since I knew that much from my daughter that would work. What I did carry that was really useful, though, is a 6 USB port Anker, A-N-K-E-R, charging hub. That's a brand. And that pretty much served my needs. You know, I carried an iPad, 2 phones, my watch. My watch had it, you know, my Moto 360. It had its own plug, but, you know, I let my daughter plug in her stuff into it. I think she had an Anker with her, too, but we really didn't need 2 of them. iPad Mini 4 charged fine off it. Worked really well. I'm really happy with these Anker things, Anker brand
now,
things.
Now, with that one,
yeah.
When you bought it, did it come with an American plug for the wall? And did you have to get a UK plug, or did you buy it with a UK plug? I'm always curious about how easy or hard it is to get those plugs. And I believe that one's either the 3-prong or the 2-prong.
Yeah.
And the figure eight end.
Yeah, so this is just a regular old U.S. plug. that I bought from Amazon. You know, I buy pretty much everything either Amazon or Costco. And then I spent, I think, a whole $8 to buy a 4-pack of UK to US plug adapters.
Okay.
So I plugged the Anker power, you know, AC transformer right into, or not a transformer, the AC plug, right into the UK adapter, and then plug that into the wall, and it worked just fine.
Awesome. Yeah, those plug adapters that they make now are just amazing. The universal to whatever country you're going to.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, the huge opening, but it fits pretty much every other outlet in the world.
Yeah, so that was, and I was carrying a couple of power strips, but I never used any of them. The hub just basically took care of everything for me. So that was kind of neat. And, you know, even electric shavers. By the way, there's separate shaver sockets that are different from the other. I think their shaver sockets are 2 prongs and everything else is 3 prongs.
Hmm.
So, and the shaver sockets are in the bathrooms only, which kind of makes sense. But that means you can't plug anything into the bathroom aside from that, including, you know, for women, hair dryers.
Hmm.
But so you got to dry. My daughter had to dry her hair outside of the bathroom, I guess. But in any case. The other thing, okay, moving on from power, is the phones, you know. So the phones was what really worried me a lot. In my daughter's case, before she left, I paid to terminate her AT&T contract and unlock the phone, you know, through AT&T. And when she got there, she basically just took out her SIM and put in a SIM that works in the UK using a, you know, Vodafone UK plan. For me, that was not an option. I mean, I guess I could have unlocked it and gotten the SIM there, but that seemed like too much work. So, and not really what I wanted to do. So what I did was, first, even though I didn't plan to use my AT&T iPhone as a phone in the UK, I paid $30 for 1 month of a low-end international roaming plan, which basically gives you a whole 80 megabytes. It's megabytes, you know, like 3 email messages. And reduced cost for voice, plus I think free texting. But really, I did that just for emergencies. You know, in case I accidentally switched out of airplane mode and emails started coming in, and I'll get charged thousands of dollars had I not had that plan, that kind of thing. But fortunately, that didn't happen. So I paid $30, and like lots of insurance that you never use, basically it went down the drain. You know, I gave AT&T $30 and really never used it.
Yeah, last time I traveled internationally, it was to Canada. And because that's really the extent of my international travel on a regular basis. But I paid $30 to Verizon. And I remember I had 100 megabytes of data.
Oh, big.
And no, I don't think I had any. I might have voice and text, something like that. But I switched off all of the data services on my iPhone. And basically, because, you know, you can go in and say per app, you know, you can't use data, you can't use data, et cetera. And at the end of the time, I was there for about 4 or 5 days, and I had somehow managed to use like 25 megabytes.
Oh.
So I was doing pretty good on my 100. And I think that might have even included a little bit of tethering, like a tiny, tiny bit of tethering. So.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can do it. You can go back to the Stone Age when you have to, data-wise.
Well, yeah, what I did was, though, you know, because I have 2 phones. And fortunately, my other phone is the Nexus 6 on the Google Fi network. Now, in the U.S., I'll be writing about this for extremetech.com, so I'll have more details about my experience with, you know, Google Fi in particular. But in the U.S., Google Fi is a virtual network, right? So it uses both T-Mobile U.S. and Sprint for its voice and data and text, and it switches between actually I haven't studied it, you know. I'm keeping a log, automatic log, using an app, but you know, it seems like it goes to Sprint for a while, like days and days, and then I'll switch to T-Mobile for a couple days. I'm not really sure why that's the case. It doesn't seem to be location dependent, it's more like time dependent. But in any case, in the UK, or actually worldwide, it uses the T-Mobile international roaming plan, essentially, which gives you data at the cost you pay in the U.S., free texting, and I think voice at 10 cents a minute, which is very reasonable, you know, unless you're going to be talking for hours to somebody. And so when I landed in Heathrow, I turned on my Nexus 6, and it took a little while. It took like a couple minutes, I think, for it to acquire T-Mobile UK's network. But once it did, it was pretty good. And although T-Mobile UK in general doesn't have very good coverage from, at least in the places I was, and that was kind of around in England, at least it was kind of the areas around Manchester, England, and in Scotland I was all over the place. We started out southeast in the capital of Edinburgh and headed to the northwest Isle of Skye, and so we covered quite a bit of ground. And in almost all cases where I either had very weak or no signal, my daughter's Vodafone UK plan was live, except in the Isle of Skye. That was very, I don't know. I saw people using phones there, but I don't know what plan they're on. But it wasn't apparently Vodafone UK or T-Mobile UK. But to make a long story short, it worked pretty good. And a couple of surprises. If you look at Google Fi's documentation on the web, they say that when you travel internationally, you'll be limited to 3G at 256kbps download speeds. But I saw LTE, when I did get a strong signal in England and Scotland, I saw LTE connections, and I didn't run any tests because I didn't want to burn megabytes. But it seemed plenty fast to me. It didn't seem like it was 256k. You know, web pages popped in pretty reasonably, maps updated pretty reasonably. I was very pleasantly surprised, and I saw LTE connections quite often when I did have a connection. Sometimes it would drop down to 3G or even GPRS, but at that point, if you drop down to 3G and GPRS, I found that I had no data at all. It just didn't work. It wasn't just slow, it just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So
that is kind of what I notice even here in the U.S. and rural areas, where if I drop down to, I'm on a CDMA network, so if I drop down to 1RX, or the oldest of the old CDMA data standards, I just don't have data. Yeah. It's not that I have really slow data. It just, iPhones don't like slow data connections.
No, and neither the Nexus 6 apparently. One other thing for people who say, well, that's because you took a U.S. phone with you. You know, the Nexus 6 is what I was testing. Well, I would say to that, my daughter has an iPhone 6, purchased here in the U.S., and she's using a Vodafone UK SIM while there, and she had much better coverage. So I don't think it was just, we were missing frequencies or anything. I think it's just a bigger network over there. So that was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing is, okay, so what does this cost? And this is where, I not being, I guess, the world's smartest person, when I read Google Fi's documentation about international travel, it says, well, you're charged $10 a gigabyte. $10 a gigabyte, just like you are here in the U.S. But I wasn't sure if it meant you were using your 10 gigabytes that you already had, for the U.S. I just have a 1 gigabyte plan, because I hardly use data, really. I'm in Wi-Fi most of the time. So are you using that first, or do I pay in addition? Well, it turns out you pay in addition. So your domestic gigabytes are different from your international gigabytes. So you start, whatever even if you use less than a gigabyte in the U.S. before you go to your foreign country of your destination, when you get there, you start at zero and you start paying out through an international plan. But it's still at the same rate, $10. And so for me, assuming they don't update and I think it's updated, and they don't update it again, it appears that my international roaming cost, now remember, I paid $30 to AT&T for something I didn't use, but my actual usage, voice, data, text, while in the UK, and I was there 10 days, is $3.64.
I wouldn't complain about that.
No, I have zero complaints.
I can't buy a decent burrito for $3.64, so...
So, I was quite pleased that I had Google Fi, that it worked. When it worked quite well. Like I said, it didn't have the coverage range that Vodafone apparently does. Next time I go, I'll probably be mostly in London, so I expect to have pretty good service. Or at least I hope I do. And like you said, John, I'm not complaining about paying $3.64 for my little international jet-setting jaunt. especially since I paid $30 to AT&T for not using it, doing it.
I am complaining about the price of burritos, but that'll be a different podcast, a different rant for another.
And earlier you were talking about leaving your phone mostly off or whatever when you're in Canada. And so one of the things I did discover while I was in the UK is I left in airplane mode all the time, but I wanted GPS data for my photos, right? So I could, it would geotag them automatically. So the question was, in the older versions of iOS, there used to be a separate location switch to turn on just the GPS. When I went looking for it in iOS 9, I didn't find it. So I said, what the heck? I don't get it. So what it ended up doing was I turned on Wi-Fi. It was still in airplane mode, right? So cell networks, all that other stuff, Bluetooth, everything else was turned off. But Wi-Fi, turning on Wi-Fi apparently turns on GPS. I guess it's the, you know, assisted GPS stuff. But that worked even places where there was no Wi-Fi, like, you know, in the mountains of the Isles of Skye. So that's my tip. If you're going to be going somewhere where you don't have an international plan, but you want GPS geotagging for your photos, just turn on Wi-Fi. And quite honestly, it didn't kill my battery. Even though, you know, it never connected to an access point, generally speaking, on days where, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. So that...
Cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've seen that documented anywhere. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people know that, but I don't really see people writing it down. So I thought that was pretty neat. And speaking of GPS, I tried Google's offline maps because I figured I'd be in places where I had no connectivity. And that worked reasonably well. You know, basically, you're in map mode, though. You can't switch from, like, map to, you know, earth mode, right, where you see the terrain and stuff. So that worked pretty well. And, you know, you can see yourself moving around when you're in a... You know, traveling, whatever. The other thing that turned out to be unexpectedly handy was Google Fi's Wi-Fi calling feature, which allows phone calls to be routed through Wi-Fi to your phone if you're on a Wi-Fi connection. And it turned out that I had an unexpected important call come to me while I was in the Isle of Skye in Scotland. And in the Isle of Skye, I had T-Mobile UK had basically no service there. I couldn't get voice, data, nothing. But the hotel I was in had Wi-Fi, and so the phone call got to me from the U.S., and it was something I needed to deal with. It was pretty important, so I was really glad that it worked.
Thanks for saving the world.
Yeah.
I can only assume, by the way you're saying this, you are an international superhero, and there was a villainous threat, and
that's
you
right.
took care of it.
That's right. We took care, you know, gave the order, you know.
Yeah, yep.
You know, just, yeah. Deal with the character and move on.
Yep. There'll be a movie about it in a couple of years.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The born non-identity, but anyway. Speaking of Wi-Fi, another thing was, while there was free Wi-Fi in airports and hotels and Apple Store in Edinburgh, I stood outside the Apple Store and did a mini podcast from there using their Wi-Fi. There are a lot of places, a lot of restaurants and pubs that, you know, advertise free Wi-Fi right in their door or whatever. But really, you need some kind of UK-based account to use them. So those kind of free Wi-Fi is really only for UK residents, as far as I could tell. Or, you know, people who are there with, you know, for longer term. And going back to my Nexus 6, you know, which is on the Fi network, it froze a couple of times while I was UK, and I still don't know why. I don't know if it's because I was using it a lot there, you know, more than I use in the US for whatever reason. But it when I got back to the U.S., it stopped freezing. So
I had that with Android phones. This is some issue that has plagued Android phones, I think, where if they're in a network they're not familiar with or there's something screwy network-wise, it just causes the whole phone to freeze. Because I remember back in when I lived in the Northeast, occasionally my phone would just act really screwy for a whole day. And if I turned on airplane mode and then even turned on the wireless radios, it's really the only thing that wasn't connected was the network, it would work fine. And I never could quite figure out what the weird issue was, but yeah, Android phones, for some reason, if they get some weirdness from the network, they can act like that.
That sounds reasonable to me, because it would happen several times a day sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly in Edinburgh. In other parts of Scotland, not so much. But I know in Edinburgh, several times, I'd be just walking down and I want to, you know, get a map reading or something, you know, from using data, not the offline stuff. And it would just lock up, and I would have to press and hold the power button and shut it down and reboot.
It didn't like your phone's accent.
It could be. And I should say, you know, there's some pretty funny videos on YouTube if you want to have people discuss, you know, various accents in the UK and Scottish, various Scottish accents and so forth. But at any rate, this one is clothing technology. Now, John, I know you have several Scotty Vest clothing items, and I do too. And but this is the first time I've bought a jack jacket. You know, I bought a hoodie and shirts and stuff, but I live in warm weather. It never gets below 65 degrees here. There's really no need for a jacket.
Hence the reason why you don't travel much.
but you know, where we were going, it was in the, and this is in Fahrenheit, it was in sort of the high 30s and mid 40s. So it was pretty cool, you know, even by mainlander standards. And very windy, I should note. So there's also wind chill to deal with. But so I bought a Scotty Vest Revolution Plus jacket, which had pretty good reviews, had lots of pockets, even has a pocket big enough to fit a standard size iPad in. And it was a good jacket. I really liked it. But there were a couple of problems with it, some minor, some kind of moderate. The biggest problem it has is that the hood zipper kept unzipping. And so, you know, several times we were walking along somewhere and I didn't need the hood at the moment. So I you know, I popped it off my head. It was just dangling from the deck. My daughter said, "Hey, Dad, the zipper on your hood's coming off." And I said, "Hey, can you just pull it for me?" And she'd, you know, pull it for me and re-zip it. But had she not been there, I kind of wonder if it would have fallen off at some point. So
Scotty Vest zippers do that, though. This has been a problem on the jacket and a hoodie that I use, and they're about 7 or 8 years old now. Yeah. Both of them have detachable arms.
These have detachable arms.
Yeah. But those zippers work themselves loose like crazy. And whenever I wear those two jackets, pretty much every time I put them on, I have to check to see if the zipper's loose and re-zip it. So that's always been my main complaint with those two jackets.
Well, my recommendation to Scotty Vest, if this is a universal problem, is you need to put locks, some kind of locking mechanism on the zippers, so that if you are going to leave them on, you know, and I needed that hood. I use that hood a lot. I mean, you know, by using it, I mean, putting it on my head. But, you know, you don't need it all the time. But it was used several times a day, and so it's not something I was going to unzip and just leave in a hotel. You need to have some kind of locking mechanism that thing, so that thing will not unzipper. That was really annoying. The other annoying thing is there are sometimes, like, you know, packing up to, you know, take a flight, you know, flying with the jacket, because it's still pretty cool going to the airport and stuff. The hood does not fold and fit back into the pouch. I mean, I don't know what tiny robots they use to put that thing in, but normal human hands, I'm telling you, are not dexterous enough to fold that thing to a sufficient compression level quickly enough to stuff it back in the pouch. So that was kind of annoying.
One of the travel tips that works extremely well for Scotty Vest gear, though, and this works for regular jackets, too, that have normal pockets. But every time I tell it to people, it, like, blows their mind that you can do this, is that before you go through, like, when you're on the way to the airport or, you know, you're going to go through TSA or something like that, and you go, gee, I've got, you know, my wallet in my back pocket, and I've got my keys in my, you know, jeans pocket, and I have my phone here, and I've got my wedding band on, I've got all this other stuff. Just take all that stuff and put it in your jacket pockets. Zip your jacket pockets closed or whatever, and then take your jacket off and put that through the scanner.
Yeah, no, that's a good tip.
It's a quick tip. It gets you through. You're not pulling stuff out. You're not losing stuff because you're fumbling with it. It amazes me how many people I see don't do that. And with Scotty Vest, it's great because you have a pocket for all that stuff. But even a regular jacket, most jackets that I've seen today have zippable pockets, especially if you're in cold weather climates, you'll have one or two of those, or interior pockets where it's reasonably safe to, you know, put it down. It won't come jiggling out or anything. But that's perfectly fine. You don't have to put your keys in that little bowl or something like that or in the bin. You can put it in your coat and just send your coat right through the scanner.
Right. And I hope that, TSA probably won't care, but I hope the airlines will not tag me for extra luggage. But I actually packed clothes in my Scotty Vest because it has so many pockets.
I did that too a few times.
Yeah.
No problem at all.
Yeah. Nobody stopped me. You know, I had like a change of clothes in my jacket.
I had a Scotty Vest once on the way back from the Microsoft MVP Summit where I had about 6 cell phones in it. And a number of other gadgety things and everything else. And for those summits, I used to carry, for the week we would be there, I would carry just, you know, carry on. I never checked any luggage. Yeah. And so I used my SkyVis quite a bit. And I'll never forget a TSA agent at Seattle Tacoma that had to go through my Scotty vest because it went to the scanner, and the guy looked at me and goes, "There's a lot of electronics in this." I said, "Yeah, there are." You know, I just got back from this MVP summit. And so he goes, "Well, do you mind if I go through?" "No, go ahead." And I remember standing there as he was trying to find all the pockets, pointing them out to him. And it took him about 10 minutes to unload the thing completely, and it took me a minute to put everything back in.
And so, I should note that you can lose stuff in your Scotty vest. I mean, you can feel it. And you know it's there. We just can't figure where the pocket is.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a common thing for me. Like, okay, I can feel it. I know there's a phone here somewhere. Which pocket is it in? Speaking of that, the Scotty vest Revolution Plus jacket has a special pocket kind of on the underside of the breast that is specially designed for phone. In fact, it's designed for a touchscreen phone because it has a little translucent pocket that allows you to touch it without removing it from the pocket. The problem is it's not big enough for an iPhone 6 Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Or Nexus 6. So, as I have been, well, I still haven't actually spoken to the Aloha shirt makers whose pockets are way too small. But Scotty vest, you need to get with the phablet.
Yep.
So, phablet phones are here to stay, despite the iPhone 5 SE. Now, one thing it does, the big phones do fit in, as I bought, even though it's a short sleeve shirt and I was going to relatively cold weather for me at least. I bought Scotty Vest's short sleeve camp shirt, which is a bright blue. It's probably not something you're going to wear to work every day, but, you know, maybe you will. But the great thing about it is it has two well-designed, and by well-designed, I mean, you know, they don't sag, well-designed extra large breast pockets. There are two of them that you can easily hold both an iPhone 6 Plus and an Nexus 6 in those two pockets and still have the magnetic clasp, you know, clasp over them, so when you wash your hands in the restrooms, they don't fall out into the basin and things. So I recommend that shirt highly. I have no criticisms of that shirt, except the color is awfully bright, which is nice in Hawaii, but in other places it may not fit in so much in the sort of the clothing decor of wherever you are. And the breast pocket has a double pocket, so you can actually stick a passport sort of separated by cloth from your phone. So your phone is in one large pocket, your passport's in another large pocket. They're both protected by a magnetic clasp so they don't fall out by accident. And that shirt worked out real well. You know, basically, even though I was going to a cold weather place, I just grabbed the sweater and tossed it over to keep me, you know, keep the arms warm.
Since you're talking about pockets and traveling with clothing, the other tip that I've taken on flights for a bigger person like me, this is invaluable, is wear cargo pants that have pockets not just at your thigh, but also at your ankle.
There are pockets because, at ankles?
Yeah, if you get cargo pants that are standard parachute BDU, you know, the right pocket layout, that they're the same pocket layouts that, you know, the military uses, you get one that's right about midway between your knee and your foot, so right about ankle level. Those are great for headphones.
Ah.
Other miscellaneous things, when you're sitting in your seat
and you can still reach
on the airline, you can reach them easily, you can get things in and out, and they're generally, I use that for the things that I'm not going to need any other time than when I'm sitting on the flight and I don't want to be fumbling around with my pockets up by my thighs or my, you know, regular pants pockets or coat pocket, or because I don't wear a coat when I'm sitting there because I don't have room for a coat anyway. So really, that's a great pocket that I don't think many people think about. But that's always where my headphones goes, where my boarding pass goes, and other random junk.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, because I don't really have any cargo pants anymore. I think I used to. I don't have any more. I have cargo shorts, because, you know, I'm in Hawaii, so basically shorts are normal. You know, if you're not working, that's what you're wearing. And that's awfully handy to have, especially since, as I said, shirt manufacturers make shirt pockets way too small to be useful. So cargo pants pockets are, or cargo shorts pockets are a must in Hawaii, in my opinion, if you're a guy. I should go look in Scotty Vest, see if there's some cargo pants for my next trip.
I can always send you the link of the ones I buy.
Sure, yeah.
They are, I've bought them for the last 15 years, and some of the pairs I have lasted over 10 years.
Are these like Tactical Brand or something?
They are Rothco, R-O-T-H-C-O. You can get them by a number of different sellers on Amazon. and they go by different names by different sellers, but they're basically double seamed cargo pants. They go for about $35 a pair.
That's reasonable.
And they last forever.
Wow, great, great.
And they have ties at the bottom of the pants too, so you know, you don't have to ever worry about tripping over, you know, your shoe won't get caught in the big pant leg, anything like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to make it through the whole list. I'm kind of amazed, and we are only, let's see, how are we doing on time? We are like 40 minutes in. Yeah, it's going to be a long one, but I'll get through. The next two are pretty fast. The last three items are all video tips, or video, not tips, video observations. So, you know, for most of the time I was traveling, it was with my daughter, so we were, you know, going out to dinner and talking and stuff. But the last day in the UK, I was by myself. You know, she headed back to campus. I spent the day just sort of packing and getting ready to fly home. And so I had a day to myself. And that evening, after I finished packing, I tested a couple of things, last-minute things. The first thing I tested is, does my Netflix account work? My U.S. Netflix account work in the UK? And the answer is yes. However, you get content license for the U.K. So I guess if there's anything unique to the U.K., I could have watched it there. I didn't, but I did notice that I did see – I wasn't able to get some things that you can get in the U.S. And I noticed some things that I'd never seen before. So that was sort of interesting. The other related item is that I have I don't really have a YouTube Red subscription. I have a Google Play Music All Access or whatever they call it. Basically, you know, to listen to Google Play Music, which also includes YouTube Red subscriptions. And if you are in the U.S., YouTube Red subscription means that you don't see ads on videos, which is really handy because those ads are annoying. In the UK, when I went to YouTube, it said, hey, you know, you're not in the US anymore, basically. So YouTube Red is not active here, and you're going to see subscriptions, which I did. So that was interesting. And the last item is that I'm also an Amazon Prime subscriber. And if you don't know, if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber in the US, you probably know it includes Amazon Prime Videos, which allows you to watch videos kind of like Netflix, you know, without additional costs and all that thing. But unlike Netflix, you can't, some number of them, not all of them, some number of TV shows and movies, and they're pretty large. I didn't find any I couldn't download. You can download offline for offline viewing to your mobile device. And so I downloaded a couple of movies and TV shows to my iPad Mini 4. And without any network connectivity, I was able to play them back. I think you have like, it depends on the license, but usually you have a week or two after you start watching something to finish watching it offline. And that worked just fine. So, you know, you don't need to worry about what kind of Wi-Fi you have or that sort of thing. So that was kind of neat. Or, you know, you're in an airplane, for example, you've got nothing. In my case, especially while you're over the ocean. I thought that was a real good value. It's not something you probably use a lot in the U.S., but certainly if you travel any extent, Amazon Prime free downloaded videos are a real nice thing to have. And in fact, I think if you have YouTube Red, you can download YouTube videos without using any additional software. So, you know, if there's something you want to watch offline, you can do that. Anyway, those are my 21 observations, tips, grumps from my travel. So, you know, the country bumpkin speaks.
Well, I think those are excellent tips, and I think they'll be helpful to anyone who does take a trip in the near future. Some of those things are just very reassuring for those of us that don't travel that often internationally. Yeah. I don't travel that often internationally. And so there are some things there, especially related to data and getting connected, that are good to know about. So thank you for sharing your even your embarrassing stories about being unable to turn on your TV.
Well, you know, I think those are the most valuable, right? So, you know, I'll look stupid so you don't.
Exactly.
And at least I was alone, so I didn't look stupid to anybody else but me. So, I did one more thing. This is not something I learned during my trip, but I've got an article into Extreme Tech. I don't think it's live yet. But recently Opera, if you remember the browser Opera, added a very interesting feature. They added free VPN. Mm-hmm. Into the browser, into the developer edition, not the mainstream edition. So if you download the developer edition, it now includes a free VPN service, which is kind of neat. Also includes free ad blocking, but I've got an article that I think is coming on Extreme Tech. I should be coming out probably Monday. And again, I'm going to be writing something about Google Fi in particular, not just international travel, but sort of Google Fi undocumented. So that'll be coming up in next week or so. Anyway, John, you have something you have kind of travel related.
Yeah, sort of semi-travel related. So I was at a large home improvement store today, And I was looking at locks because ever since I was a child, I've kind of been intrigued by locks. And now that the internet exists in wide stream, yeah, there's more than just me. I always thought I was the weird kid that liked that. But no, you can find a lot of groups out there that refer to, you know, designing locks and picking locks and, you know, designing keys and all that as lock sport, basically. And I was taking a look at some of the locks that are available at large retailer, and pretty much any of the large retailers sell these same locks. I was at a Lowe's, but you can get the same locks at Home Depot. And it strikes me because one of the most common locks today is Kwikset. Kwikset makes, you know, about, well, probably more than half of the lock sets that are sold in the United States that are kind of the upper level lock sets. Wow. For private usage. They're big name. Schlage is the other big name that you see in the consumer space. Now, right. When you get to you know, buildings, you know, commercial buildings and industrial buildings, you see kind of the real lock manufacturers out there that they go with. You know, they're definitely, if you're really security conscious at home, you would buy a lock from them, but you're looking at paying, you know, $50 to $100 instead of $20 or $30.
Right, right.
But the Kwikset, the reason I like to talk about Kwikset and the thing that I want to tell people about is that it's not a very secure lock. And recently, ever since 2008, Kwikset has been phasing in what they call their smart key technology. So here's the geek hook of this. Smart key, internally, the lock is designed in such a way that you can rekey it almost instantly. You basically put in the key that works, you turn it 90 degrees, you put this little tool that they give you in the package, mm-hmm, into a little slot, you click it, and then you can pull out the old key, put in a new key, rotate it back 90 degrees, and you're rekeyed.
Mm, okay.
So this is basically sold to people as, isn't this a great system? Because you can rekey your house within a couple of seconds, and then if you're going on vacation, you can give your house sitter a key that once that you get back, when you rekey back, they won't be able to use it anymore, etc. The problem with Kwikset is that the internals of their locks are not as high quality as you might think when you're paying the prices that they charge. And these rekeyable ones, and now I've noticed that you can't buy a Kwikset without this smart key technology. The rekeyable ones, there are hacks and exploits on the web that literally with, you know, a certain tool or with a hammer and a screwdriver, you can force them open quite easily. And you can do this with you. If you have the tool, it is undetectable. It doesn't look like anyone's done anything. It actually destroys the inside of the lock, but you come home, your house is burglarized, you don't know what happened because the lock looks fine. Unless you take it to a locksmith and they open it up and go, wow, this has been, you know, crushed inside, basically. So I just I like to tell people about this because honestly, if you have any choice, if you live in an apartment complex, your apartment complex is probably gone with Kwikset because it seems to be the cheapest option for them. You want to have other security methods then if you have to be forced to use Kwiksets. Use, you know, door chains and make sure you have bolt locks. Make sure that guard the way your key looks because it's quite easy to. So, for example, on my house key, it's a Kwikset because I live in an apartment, and the key code is right on there. So, if someone were to look at my keys and see that code, they could go to a locksmith and just say, "Hey, I lost my key. Can you cut me a key on Kwikset 1 with this code?" And they have a key to my house.
Wow.
So, and also these smart key ones, while in theory they have about 77,000 possible keys, the tolerances are so low on them that there are about 240 actual keys. So if you know anything about this, if your job is to break into places, whether legally or illegally, and you do your research, you could probably get those 240 keys cut and have them on a giant ring. And in 10 minutes, cycle through all of them, you'll find one that will open any Kwikset one lock.
That's
so
pretty frightening.
Yeah, it's stuff that people don't normally think about, and Kwikset has some very expensive lock sets now. They have the Kivo Bluetooth-enabled locks. I would shy away from Kwikset just because it is so common. It's easy to get the blanks. It's easy to do a lot of work. Schlage, the main competitor, the SC1 keyway from Schlage is also just as common as KW1 from Kwikset, but the Schlage internals are a little bit better. So if you're going to go with commercial providers, go with probably Schlage over Kwikset. And if you're going, if you really want security, don't use either of them. Go get yourself something that they would use in a commercial setup, so Medico or Assa Abloy or something like that. That, you know, basically the keys that your office gives you, look at who makes those keys. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that you would actually want if you were really interested in physical security.
Okay, good tip, good tip. Not being a key junkie, I did not know any of that stuff. And John has some links to his cargo pants on Amazon, so I will put that in our blog show notes when you if you come over to the blog and take a look. Don't forget, you can find it on both iTunes and Google Music now. I don't know how you find the Google Music, but I will look at instructions and use the recommended language by Google so I don't upset the Google overlords, because we don't want to do that.
They already have that video of you trying to turn on your TV. So if you don't want them to release that, you should keep them happy.
I should do what they say. Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, it's good to be talking to John after nearly a month of not talking to you. This has been Mobile Blues Podcast number 157, and we'll return to our normally programmed content next time, whenever that is. We will talk to you later.